All right, let's head over to our Zoom line here where we've got Mr. Warren Martin on the line with us. He's with Kansas Strong. Oil Man reviews and reacts to the Landman series streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. How you doing today, Warren Martin?
Doing great. How about yourself, Jason?
Doing well. I understand you're in a blizzard. We're in sub-zero temperature, so we're both getting hit by weather. And of course, now is one of those times where we do a quick little PSA about energy poverty, as well as how many homes that the oil and gas industry heats on a consistent basis. One of the reasons that Landman is doing what it's doing, raising awareness. Warren, you got a 30-second PSA about sub-zero temperatures and blizzards in the oil and gas industry for us?
Well, it's the same 30-second commercial that I do every year, and we actually have it running on Facebook right now. When someone turns up the thermostat, they put on that pot of tea or coffee or whatever it is. And be sure and thank your energy workers that are providing you the energy to keep you warm. And just a reminder that energy protects us from the environment. Energy is not the danger to the environment, it's what protects humanity from the environment. And that is so often forgotten.
My response to that, Warren, is I reject your truth and I think I'll invent my own. Isn't that what the environmentalists did to the oil and gas industry, essentially? They rejected their truth and decided to invent their own. I just put that together right now when we
Yeah.
were talking. Well, because my first thing I wrote down was during the recap, that
Yeah.
was one of the things they reminded us of. And that was a powerful statement. And now, as I'm kind of in real time processing that, for me personally, one of the reasons I started covering and started supporting the oil and gas industry, I didn't come from the oil and gas industry. I came from agriculture, basically. Okay, I come from Western Minnesota, Eastern North Dakota. I'm 7 hours away from the nearest oil and gas rig. It wasn't until I moved out to Western North Dakota that I embedded myself in an oil and gas community. And much like Daniel Day-Lewis is a method actor, I am a method journalist. So I embedded myself in the Bakken oil field. And honestly, when I went into there from a journalist point of view, I thought I'd probably write more environmental stories, that type of thing. And honestly, it didn't even take a week, Warren, before I saw the reality that the oil and gas industry was doing more to protect and reduce environmental concerns than they were causing the problems. Yes, there was problems. Again, I came from the agriculture industry where spilled ammonia is not uncommon either, and hydrous ammonia and those types of things. So everybody has their shortcomings, their pitfalls, and their security concerns, Warren. But the entrepreneurship that I saw, the environmental proactive nature that the oil and gas industry took on, I had to switch my personal narrative that I had for the oil and gas industry when I went into it. But what do you make of that? That it kind of started out a little bit, the connection I just made to how the environmentalists did exactly what she said that she was going to do, which is, I reject your truth and I think I'll invent my own.
Yeah, the environmentalist that's now the vice president of the company. And I think that that's what a lot of us, the world that we live in, where we have our own truth, and we live in a world where everyone has their own truth, but there are facts that are out there that are realistic to everybody. And it really comes down to a definition of terms. It comes down to understanding exactly what each party's talking about. And if you clearly define the terms and understand what each other's talking about, you can usually come to a logical conclusion that was there. I shared in our last episode how I presented to a bunch of environmental scientists, and we agreed. We weren't disagreeing on the data, we were disagreeing on the conclusions. And the reason we were disagreeing on the conclusions is because they define the word environment as everything that exists in the world without people. I define the word environment as everything that exists in the world, including people. And that radically changes your conclusions that you're going to draw from that data. And so I think that that's very much the scenario that we're in here. When we at Kansas Strong, we're dedicated to changing the conversation about the oil and gas industry. A lot of it has to do with clearly defining the terms that we're talking about to make sure everybody's on the same page, because you can't change the conversation unless everyone knows what it is you're actually saying by the words you're using.
The next thing I noticed as we're kind of going through my notes here chronologically through the episode, some I might skip just because, like number three, I had soundtrack continues to rock. Demi Moore is in the beginning of the episode. She's in the hospital with Tommy Norris, aka Billy Bob Thornton, and Demi Moore. They're in the hospital, and Warren, what I took from that, honestly, was this was the bigger picture now. This was them telling the story that women are now transitioning into power in the oil and gas industry, whether it's Oxy transitioning into the role as a CEO, or women taking on more positions of power in the C-suite executive roles. Is there a bigger story being told here by Tyler Sheridan, that as Demi Moore is now in episode 9 transitioning into power? It almost seems very much like that story arc is trying to mimic what society is going through.
Yeah, I think there is more of a storyline here than just that. I think that's definitely a part of it. That's a significant part of it. I thought I was about to be proven wrong in my prediction where she's going to take over the company when he started talking to Tommy. And I thought he was going to turn the company over to Tommy for just a second, but he just made him a VP instead of turning the company over to him. I still think it's going to go to her, and she's going to be the one that's going to be in control of the company. But I think the storyline's bigger than that in this episode, for sure. I think that scene really set up the entire episode. And what it set it up as it set it up with the tagline of real life matters. And real life makes you think. And that's what this entire episode really revolved around, was this idea of what happens in real life. And this is probably one of the more realistic. You get past the landman dealing with the cartel and the National Guard in the very first of it. You get past that, this is one of the most realistic episodes that was really put out in this series to date. I think it was set up by Demi Moore, and I think it really talks about the idea of women taking power and leadership roles. But also, you know, you go through the entire episode, it talks about what your passion is and your purpose. It talks about, is your family involved in it? Are they waiting in the waiting room? Are you working with them on a daily basis? That's what matters most. It goes to Cooper and his son and talks about the dreams, the dreamers versus the losers, which we talked about earlier on in the show. And I think that really set it up that this was the episode that was really going to bring it kind of home, to really bring it to that point where real life makes you think about what's really important in life. And those were heavy issues that were taken up in this episode.
So I'm going to jump ahead in my notes, and then we'll come back to a few of the other storylines here, because what you're mentioning and talking about is peppered throughout the entire episode and in my notes. And quite honestly, this should have been the lead, and yeah, I'm sure it will be the lead headline in many reviews across Landman, episode 9, titled Wolf Camp, and we'll get to that a little bit later too, but the Jerry Jones cameo. So here you have the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, who's one of the most well-known people on the planet, and here he makes a cameo, does a fantastic job acting, by the way. He got a little teary-eyed there. I don't know if they had to put some, like, Vaseline in his eyes, or if they had to do what, but he got a little bit teary-eyed there. But Jerry Jones was used as an instrument to humanize the industry. This was another major step in the right direction for the industry. I've been critical for the last decade about how the industry really hasn't done a very good job going beyond the industry. Sponsoring a bowl game, for example, would be one of the best examples. Instead of the Pop-Tarts Bowl, why isn't there an Exxon Mobil Bowl or a Shell or a BP bowl or something like that, because somebody going to a bowl game, I've never met anybody who's had a negative experience at a bowl game. They talk about how it's just, it is like any kind of game times 10, because everybody's having a good time. It's a party atmosphere. It's Mardi Gras in a stadium. But Jerry Jones's speech, here's what I wrote down, and this is to just kind of accentuate what you said, Warren. Jerry Jones's speech also reminds us that so many small business owners choose the path they choose because of family values. Be available 24/7 for your family. Control your schedule so you can be at the soccer games, at the baseball games, at the volleyball tournaments. And that was shown in earlier episodes. Yeah, he might have been on the phone. He might have been multitasking. But one of the reasons I found interviewing many of the supply chain in the oil and gas industry and a lot of the small mom and pops is that it's all based on family values. Their whole company is based on trying to be available 24/7 so their family can have a quality of life not controlled by someone else. Yes, they have responsibilities and et cetera, but they want to make sure that they can be flexible for their family. So anyways, to get back to your point about that, what did you make of Jerry Jones?
Yeah, Jerry Jones, one, I think that, you know, you bring Jerry Jones in to humanize an industry. Unless you're a Cowboys fan, I'm not sure how well that goes over.
Redskins fan since I was 4 years old. So Cowboys are my least favorite team, man.
but I think that, you know, what I wrote down from that scene and what really came out to me from watching that scene was it really brought to highlight a huge issue that's in the oil and gas industry at this point in time. And that is the issue of succession. Who's going to take over the oil and gas company that you've created? And we are going through right now what is known as the generational shift or the job gap, or there's all different terms that go through.
The great crew shift. It's been
great crew shift, yep. And different names that have been applied to it. But it's this idea that we have tons of people in the oil industry that are 55 years of age or older that are on their way out. And we have a large number of people that are 35 years or younger that are on their way in, but we have this huge void between 35 and 55 of people who have not been in the industry, and there's that fear of losing that a continual knowledge that is built up from generation and passed on from generation to generation that we might lose in the industry. I think this is very critical, especially where we live here in Kansas. We have a ton of independent oil and gas producers. And this is an issue that every producer that is successful has to struggle with as they get older. Many of them, because their kids were kind of going into their careers back in the 1990s and early 2000s, their kids were going into their careers. They actually encourage their kids not to go into the oil and gas industry because environmentalism was so much on the attack against the oil and gas industry. No one was sure what the future was going to hold. New technologies like windmills and solar panels were coming on board, and people were afraid that there wasn't a future there. So we had a mass exodus of people who left the industry. And so you have a tremendous number of oil and gas companies, especially the independents, that are really struggling with their succession plan. And who is going to take over their company, how they're going to transition their company as they get to the point of retirement. What does that look like? And that's really what Jerry Jones was talking about. And he was talking about working with your family, bringing your family in. And, you know, and that's a challenge in itself, working with your family as well as bringing them in, especially if they have gone off into other careers and other industries and have never learned it. And a lot of times we compare oil and gas to the agricultural community, because there's a lot of similarities that are there. But the vast difference between the oil and gas industry and the agricultural community is in the ag industry, you grow up around ag. You're out there changing pipe. I mean, that's why I grew up. I was out there changing pipe. I was disking. I was plowing. I was sowing. I was throwing hay, feeding the cows, milking the cows, feeding the pigs, you know, doing all of that on a daily basis. I grew up around that industry. I decided I didn't want to be a part of it, but I grew up around that industry. In the oil and gas industry, you don't grow up around the industry, even if your parents work in it, because you have to be 18 years or older to be out there and working on the pipelines. You have to be 18 years or older to be out there working on the pumps. You know, there's a lot more regulation and scrutinization that takes place there So there's a lot of oil and gas kids that their parents work in the industry that have very little understanding of what their parents do. I go into schools all the time and talk to students about what the oil and gas industry is, what we do, how we do it, why it's important to them. It's amazing to me how many kids come up to me afterwards like, my dad works in the industry. I never knew what he did till today. Just because there's not that same transitional passing down of knowledge that happens in the agricultural community like what that happens in the oil and gas industry.
So what direction to go next here? Because there was really a lot going on, and we just got done talking about the Jerry Jones cameo, which, by the way, was a surprise to me. I had no advance notice that he was going to do a cameo, at least from, and we've got a content partnership with Paramount Plus, for crying out loud. But, by the way, I should mention, co-creator Christian Wallace is going to join the program on Wednesday. We'll drop that interview on Saturday. And spoiler alert, Christian Wallace was the creator of Boomtown, which this whole series is based on. And he and Tyler Sheridan are the co-creators. And the cartel storyline is actually real. That's a real storyline, Warren. To what degree, I don't know. But the actual cartel and the unloading of drugs on somebody's land is an actual real storyline that made the papers and news. And then they embellished a little bit because, obviously, the roads in an oil and gas town are some of the dangerous roads there are out there and that sort of thing. But anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit later on, but I just wanted to mention that real quick. Tommy Norris gets a promotion. You mentioned he's VP. You thought he might take over to run the company. We both believe that Demi Moore is going to end up running the company, whether she's the CEO or the owner running the company. Who knows? She'll be running the company one way or another. And spoiler alert, she might be running the company because at the end of the episode, does John Hamm's character, Monty, does he die from a heart attack? All the indication leads us to believe that he does. There was promotion that Andy Garcia would be introduced in season one, and he has not been introduced yet this season, so my guess is he'll be introduced next episode, which is the season finale. So if John Hamm passes on, does Andy Garcia now play the male role oil tycoon as a bad guy? And Demi Moore now is the good guy, good person. And you see how stories work here. Pro wrestling, everything's pro wrestling. You got to have a good guy, a bad guy. It's all got to be Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, Macho Man Savage, that kind of stuff. But John Hamm, did he die? Did Demi Moore take over that way? Tommy Morris gets a promotion. We're one episode away from the series finale. Lots of change, Warren. Lots of change.
So I'll go out on a limb here, and this may be the end of my review career for all time. But I'll go out on a limb here, and I was sitting there thinking, if I was Taylor Sheridan, and I'm not nearly as smart as Taylor Sheridan, but if I was Taylor Sheridan, where would I take this plot line? And there's a couple of a foreshadowing that I've seen. One, you've never seen Hamm and Demi Moore really intimate. You've never seen them hug on each other, kiss on each other. You've never seen them with any real intimacy throughout this entire show going forward. Now you got him in a bad situation. You got her kind of stepping up, finding her voice, moving. You got him rearranging his company and putting Tommy as a VP, as well as this environmental lawyer as a VP of the company. So I'm going to step out on a limb, and I'm going to make a prediction, because also in this episode, you had Cooper, who laid out his plan for the vision that he has of where he's going to go. And my prediction for season two going forward is that John Hamm is going to get worse. Demi Moore is going to take over the company. Her and Hamm are going to have a falling out because he gets better and begins to recover. They're going to get a divorce, split the company, become competitors against each other. Maybe this other guy comes in that role somehow. And Tommy is going to go with Hamm, and Cooper is going to go with Demi Moore, and they're going to become competitors against each other. That's my prediction for season two.
Boy, that's like a Days of Our Lives plot line there. Hey, I like that. Okay.
Go big or go home. I'm trying to give you a way to get rid of me.
Well, that's the beauty when it comes to speculating soap operas. There's never a bad idea. In fact, the more outrageous it is, usually the better entertainment it is. So.
Oh, if it goes that way, I'm taking full credit that I told Taylor Sheridan how to write the script.
I'll tell you what, though, that Demi Moore. Yeah, man, she's like a fine wine. She looks fantastic. I wow. Wow. Ashton Kutcher. I get it. Wow. Okay. but there's a great transition. You know, that was that a little too much sexuality for this podcast? Because Warren, I mean, I understand that I was an altar boy and I went to Catholic school and everything along those lines. But man, this is getting uncomfortable. The sexuality in these episodes, it's seriously, it's getting uncomfortable for me. And it's, you know, it's funny when you take a step back and you say, hey, they're going to bring these old folks into a stripper joint. Yeah, it's funny and all this other stuff, but just everything that goes in there and how, I guess, normalizing, they're making this aggressive shock and awe sexual sensationalism. Like I said, for this former altar boy and spoon-fed Catholic fear and guilt boy, man, it's a little much. It's a little much. Go ahead.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think it's going too far. You know, is that a part of the industry? That's a part of any industry that you're out there. It's part of any part of humanity where humans are existent. Sexuality is a part of it. You get three guys together, you're going to have a sexual joke at some point during the day. That's just the way that humanity works. And so it's very much a part of our lives. It's part of our series. I think you're exactly right that it's being over-sexualized in this episode. You go to any oil and gas conferences, you're going to hear stories about things that have happened at those conferences in the past. But the reason you hear them is because they were the exception, not the norm. And that's what really is crossing the line to me in this show, is exactly what you said, that it's trying to normalize it rather than show it as an extremity that occasionally might happen within an industry. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. I don't think that's the oil and gas industry as a whole. Do things happen? Are there people that that act in those types of ways? Yes, there are. But is that the oil and gas industry as a whole? No, that is not.
The other part that I think the oil and gas industry should perk up at is this how you're being viewed? Because if this is how you're being viewed, it's got to be a gut check moment, Warren. I mean, to me, this, you know, we've mentioned before that we've spoken to people in the industry before and they said, oh, I don't care as long as it makes us look badass. This goes beyond that. This goes into uncomfortable mode because my yardstick is this. If I were to bring my mom or my grandma in, God rest their souls, if I were to bring them in and sit them down and say, this is the industry that I want to go into, this is the industry that I'm making a living on, this is an industry that I work in, what would they think? Neither one of them would have made it through this episode, Warren. Neither one of them. And it would have been the sexual talk. That's all that would have offended them. It wouldn't have been anything like I believe that they're going to kidnap the daughter in the next episode. No, that's a fun storyline. You bet. No problem. Go do it. You know, go get them, cartel, grandma and mom. But that sexual stuff, that just makes it's still, to me, not at a point yet where you can sit at the kitchen table. And they're showing it through Billy Bob, too. So they are kind of trying to show it a little bit. One side's trying to really normalize it. And Billy Bob, but he's given up on it. But anyway, so that's kind of my thought on the whole thing. I don't know if you got any more on that, but.
Yeah, I think that you're exactly right, and I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. That it's going too far. It's not a normalized practice within the oil and gas industry in any way, shape, or form. I think it's really a caveat that comes from our background as an industry. You know, for years and years, decades, almost an entire century, the oil and gas industry had very much the perspective of, we're not going to respond to criticisms outside of us because you can't survive without us. And therefore, say whatever you want to say about us. You can't live without us. There's nothing you can do about it. I think that, one, developed a personality within the oil and gas industry. I think, number two, that developed a platform where people outside the industry could say anything they wanted to say about the industry. Then in the 60s, 70s, you had the environmental movement that began to come in, and they really began to up the speech. The industry continued to remain silent, and many of those storylines kept getting repeated and repeated and repeated and repeated until finally began ingrained in our society. And now we're at the point where the oil and gas industry realizes you still can't live without us, but you could legislate us out of business. You'd wake up the next morning and say, oh, man, we didn't mean to do that. But you can legislate us out of business. And so the oil and gas industry is now having to figure out how to find their voice and clearly communicate what it is we do, who we are, what we stand for, and recreate that conversation about the oil and gas industry. And we're behind the ball because society has already created the image of us as the cartel, as us as big oil, as us as, like this show is implying, that, you know, sexual predators and those types of things. And now it's incumbent upon us as an industry to figure out how to redefine that story and really capture the hearts and minds of the people of our communities to understand who we are, what we do, why we do it, why it's important to you, and that it really has to do with helping humanity move forward in life.
Speaking of humanity, Rebecca the Litigator is going to have a new role on the show and in the company, and that came out of left field as well. I thought she was in the end going to be the fall person, but it turns out she's going to have kind of a shift in her role, which is going to be an interesting deal as a lease agent because of her ruthlessness tactics. And this is really interesting, Warren, because one of the things that the oil and gas industry really became was very good with their landmen and their lease agents. When you go and talk to most people that have mineral rights, they have very positive things to say about the people on the boots on the ground people. Well, when the oil and gas industry started getting into the carbon sequestration business, I'm not sure if they got different land people or different lease agents, but there was problems down in Texas and in South Dakota and North Dakota. So three states all of a sudden had these problems, and they didn't have those in the past before. And I'm not sure if that's an age thing or that's just a training thing or if they're trying to tell a bigger story thing, but Rebecca going from this shrewd, heartless, soulless negotiator into a role that's supposed to be talking to human beings on a role that's traditionally very, very human. That I wrote that out as a note, Warren, because that was interesting to me how they're gonna spin that whole thing. Because I mean, I'd hate to see a lease agent or a landman get kind of a bad rap because of her character, because she does such a fantastic job being a bad person, a hated character, a villain, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's part of why I gave my prediction that I gave earlier, is because why in the world would you put both her and Tommy at the same time as VPs in your company? I think there's two things that kind of go into that. One of them I think is highly realistic, which is the fact that most oil and gas producers that have worked in the industry, they thrive off of competition. So it's not unusual for them to promote two people that are going to compete for the same job, compete for better, within the same company to produce a better result. Making her VP of exploration and making Tommy the VP of operations really takes Tommy out of the role of a landman and puts her into the role of a landman, which was really interesting switch that was there. And that's where I kind of was like, okay, I don't know how that works when he is the landman and now they just made her the landman. I think there's nowhere to go except to split that company at some point down the road because of those two differences that are there. But I agree with you that it's going to be interesting to see how they develop her character and where they go with it, because being in the role of the landman, go back to episode number one. What's the job of a landman? Job of a landman is to secure the lease and manage the people. She might be a go-getter and every bit available to secure the lease, but managing the people, we've seen how she manages people. That does not work on a farm and ranch out in West Texas or Kansas or Nebraska or Oklahoma or anywhere when you're talking about coming onto someone else's land. And so it's going to be interesting to see how they put her in that role of a landman type role, because really landman, even securing the lease, comes down to managing the people and building those relationships. And that's one of the things I wrote down, is that really this entire episode had to do with relationships. Every single aspect of it. Tommy's with Hams, Hams with Demi's, Tommy and Cooper's, Cooper and his girlfriend, Tommy and his wife. I mean, every single thing in this episode was a challenge to every single relationship within the show, which puts you on that that precipice where every relationship could potentially change going forward. And so it is going to be interesting to see how they move forward. And I definitely hope that whatever role they put her in, if they put her in a role of a landman, that they do have at on screen all the time some representative of a landman that accurately shows what a landman does.
When it rains, it pours for change. Job, cartel threats, stripper field trips, got dogs and cats living together now. I mean, and that change funneled down into Tommy Norris at one time, and he took a moment in the show where it just, and this, he's done this several times, where he's got to just step back. He can't, and he told his wife, I can't talk to you right now. He rejected everything around him, and that's another real thing. That is another real thing, and I'm sure it's in many industries, but in the oil and gas industry especially, and in the media industry as well, your adrenaline gets so roller-coastered. It's up and down and up and down that you do have to step away and shut off in order to gain your composure back from time to time. So honestly, in the media, we were just talking about this last week, where a lot of places force you to go on vacation, because if you do not shut your brain down for a few days, you're going to be worthless after a certain point. It just becomes this thing. And so did you notice that when he kind of took a moment and shooed away everything and just had to shut down and refocus there, Warren?
Yeah, I kind of took it a little bit different way. That's an interesting perspective you have there. I'll have to rethink that a little bit. Where I took it was in the movie, there was a movie with Dennis Quaid called The Rookie. And in The Rookie, he's a high school baseball coach, had a chance at the pros, got hurt, and he challenges his kids that if you want to, if you'll play hard and if you win district, then I'll go try out for the pros again. And so they win district. And so he goes to his dad and he asks his dad, should I go try out for the pros again or should I not? And his dad responds to him and says simply, it's okay to chase what you want to do, but there comes a time in life where you have to do what you need to do. And in other words, give up your dream and stick to your job and do what you need to do. And that's what I really saw what's going on in Tommy in this episode, is he's really struggling. A few episodes back in Dreamers and Losers, he had a very clear perspective that there's two people that come into this the industry. They're the dreamers and they're the losers. And I thought this episode was really kind of setting him up from going from a dreamer to more of a loser, and his son going from a loser to a dreamer. His son clearly showing exactly his plan that he wants to put forward, whether he's going to be able to do it or not. He puts forward that plan. On the other hand, his dad, who had that and lost it all, is now in a position where he talks to his wife, Angela, and he says to Angela, you know, my goal is to eat, drink my fake beer, and live and lie next to you and forget the day ever happened. Well, if that's not a loser, I don't know what one is.
No kidding.
Certainly not a person with ambition. That's not a person that has, you know, something they want to accomplish. That's where a lot of people get when they're in depression, where they just want to forget the day so they can get up and do it again. And then forget the day and get up and do it again. And so I really felt like that was kind of the scenario that this episode was setting him up in. And I think you find that in the oil industry. When you talk to different producers, it's really striking to talk to different producers. Those who are on the rise, those who are trying to maintain, and those who are trying to get out. And you get all of those different stories, just like we saw in Tommy and Cooper in this episode. You can hear all of those stories in the same way.
So I'll mention this next. I was going to go a different direction, but just to keep going along with what you mentioned, the only way out of the patch is the patch. That was a great monologue moment by Cooper, Tommy Norris's son, trying to explain the oil and gas industry, basically, is the only way out is here. And I've heard that in Vegas, too, where the only way out of Vegas is Vegas. You know, and so it's talking about, you know, it's a gamble. Yeah. And it's winners and losers. It's feast or famine. It's hard work. But if you can be smart about it and you've got a good plan, you will have calculated risk. And honestly, I mean, restaurants fail 80% of the time, so you got a better shot making it down in the Permian than you do in any restaurant in USA. So Cooper talks at a great moment there, explaining the only way out of the patch is the patch. What was your takeaway from that monologue?
Yeah, I think that was a really good monologue. And I think, again, this episode, like I said, I think this was one of the more realistic, besides the sexual content that was in it. I think it was one of the more realistic that was there. And it was one of the best ones that I've seen where everything tied together. And when I mean everything tied together, I mean every single part of it tied with every other part of the episode, even in that regard right there. Because the one caveat to that, or the one key, not caveat, but the one key to that entire thing is the art of negotiation. And if you look at it from the very beginning, when Jerry Jones was there, when Demi Moore's talking to her husband, when Tommy's talking to his boss, when you've got Angela going in trying to arrange for the strippers, Cooper talking with his girlfriend, talking about the industry, coming down to that speech that's there, the one common element throughout all of that was how important it is to know how to effectively negotiate. And you have to know how to negotiate at every single aspect of it. And there's multiple ways of negotiating. We saw several that were utilized in this show, people coming up from different perspectives. And I think that's really true to a landman. You find three or four landmen, you're going to find three or four different ways of negotiating. They all have different personalities. They have different perspectives. But really, the only way out of the patch, the only way you can really hit it big, the only way you can make it happen, is if you're able to build relationships with people and effectively negotiate on their terms, the way that they want to negotiate to be able to accomplish the goals that you want to accomplish. And I thought that really is what that kind of alluded to more than anything else, is that no matter what you're talking about, it comes down to negotiation, and that's all the patch is. The patch is negotiation. It's negotiation with the people, the mineral rights, it's negotiation for selling the oil, it's negotiating for buying pipe, it's negotiating for selling the product, it's negotiating with environmental issues, it's negotiating with the public, it's purely negotiation no matter what aspect you're at, and that's what landmen do. They negotiate.
I remember about a dozen years ago, 12 years ago or so, there was a spike in wolf camp articles that came out, and they talked about the potential of the wolf camp shale play. And at the Crude Life, we published quite a bit of them. We even had a few interviews on it. Then it kind of went away for a while. You didn't hear too much about the wolf camp. And a little bit about the Eagleford, Haynesville play, Permian. So I was a little bit taken back when I saw that the title was called The Wolf Camp. I'm like, oh, cool. Because the name is awesome. Wolf Camp, that's a great name. Okay, so, I mean, it makes sense that the name of the episode would be that based on the name. But my question, Warren, is do you think this is an educational awareness piece about the wolf camp, or is this just, hey, it's a cool name, let's use it because, you know, Haynesville or Permian doesn't sound as good as wolf camp. Eagleford sounds too Republican, maybe. So, hey, they're trying to, you know, play both sides here. So that's my first question. Do you think that the wolf camp is being introduced as an educational awareness moment? Because it is one of the largest plays. I've read that 70% of the oil production is going to come out of Texas in the Permian wolf camp over the next 20 years. So there's some actual reality with the foresighting that would go along with the education. But then I took a step back and I went, this is the first time I think I've heard the word shale. I don't think I've heard the word shale until this episode, maybe in episode one, but I don't think so. So I think the general population is thinking that this whole season has been Jed Clampett oil, the easy to get oil. And if we're going to evolve into season two into shale, well, that opens up technology into storylines. That opens up the politics side of things that we foreshadowed that they haven't even touched yet, Warren. I mean, if they make it through episode one without even scratching the surface of the real storylines, that's fantastic. I'd like to see their 5-year story arc or 3-year story arc. But that was my takeaway from the Wolf Camp thing, was that I wondered if this was an educational piece or just a cool name piece. And also, it now infuses in technology. If this is the first time that we've talked about the shale part of oil and gas, which I think it was, your thoughts on what I just said?
Yeah, I'm not sure on the answer to that. I was very curious of that entire part when I looked at the maps. I went back and rerounded a couple times and looked at the maps that are there. And when Cooper's laying out his plan, which, you know, to someone that's just sitting there watching it and doesn't know what's going on, it might make sense, but it made no sense to me whatsoever from the standpoint of you had 80 acres here and you had this piece of land over here and this piece of land over here and this piece of land over here, and none of them are worth going after. But if you put them all together, then you can do some horizontal drilling. And I'm thinking, and then he goes to the farmer and he talks to the farmer about his 80 acres and he's like, yeah, I don't got enough land to do horizontal drilling on. And he goes, yeah, but if I put it together with these other ones, I'm like, yeah, but how do you do a horizontal rig from your mineral right area, your lease over here, go through someone else's lease to connect it to another lease on the other? It doesn't work that way. You can't go through other people's leases. And so I'm really confused on where they were going with that storyline. I have no idea what they were trying to communicate with the title of it. It'll be interesting to see how they kind of pick up on that and where, how they play that out as Cooper begins to develop his dream. But I think his plan made no sense whatsoever from the maps that he was showing, in my opinion. But I could be wrong, and that may be why he's about to get rich and I'm not going to.
I think you're overthinking. I think they just threw out a bunch of things to say, we're going to connect the dots with horizontal drilling. That next season we're going to introduce technology with shale play. And because when you can really show somebody how they can, you know, hit a pie plate 2 miles underground, 2 miles away, and they're actually on 3 mile laterals now in a lot of places, that is pretty impressive to anybody. I mean, even if you're, you know, a Greta Thunberg acolyte, you can't not be impressed, because that is some serious video game playing technology that those petroleum engineers are doing.
Oh yeah, I mean it's the same technology that's in a cruise missile. I mean it's exactly how horizontal drilling works. It has cruise missile technology in it. The way a cruise missile works, it has the gyroscopes and everything in it, to where you build it, you create your map of the terrain, and then the cruise missile stays a certain height over the terrain, goes up and down with the hills, and stays wherever the terrain takes it. In the same way, we build a map of the strata underneath the earth, and once we got that map, we were able to use those same gyroscopes and a motorized drill head to go down and follow that same typography of that strata as it goes across through land. And it's an incredible technology that has brought an enormous amount of energy and reduced our energy cost tremendously around the world. And it's something that should be celebrated. Yet I think that he brought in Shell simply because it's a buzzword that everybody knows that goes with fracking, as well as last episode when he talked about flares, windmills. You know, he's hitting all of the hot button topics. The only one he really hadn't hit yet, which may come in episode 10, is a pipeline spill. It's the only one we haven't really hit yet.
I think they could do a whole season on that, like season 3 would involve like a pipeline spill. No, seriously. Yeah. I mean, you got to remember, in my neck of the woods, it became international news. I was interviewed on the BBC for it. That it was in, you know, the Dakota Access Pipeline up in North Dakota with the Fighting Sioux Reservation up there. So
well, we just had one. We just had one 2 years ago here in Kansas as part of the Keystone pipeline system in Washington County. It bust and flowed down a river.
I remember that, actually. I do remember that.
Remediation is complete. Everything's back to normal. You know, and we did a tremendous number of interviews. And the fact that 99.9% of all oil that goes down a pipeline, 99.99% of all oil that goes down a pipeline arrives safely without incidents. It's the safest way to transport oil, but pipeline is a buzzword that sets people off. And I think that's why Shell was brought into this episode. It's a word that people don't have any understanding of what it means, but they know it has to do with the bad things that are happening when you talk about fracking. And so it kind of raises it raises that interest just by bringing that word in.
But they didn't mention the word fracking.
No.
And he brought it up in a positive way, and it was immediately accepted by the female that he brought it up too. So, I mean, really, it was, you know, from a writer's standpoint, a strategy standpoint, it was written in a way to positively advance the industry. And that's why I was wondering more, was the Wolf Camp, is that the next big play? Like, has the technology, because the biggest issue there has been the technology. We have these issues up in the Bakken here with enhanced oil recovery. We can't get the technology to where the hype is. You know, they keep dumping research dollars in, but we can't get the enhanced oil recovery to numbers to where it's viable. It's starting to get to be like solar and wind. We're overpromising and under-delivering. In the oil and gas industry, always in the past, under-promised and over-delivered. And so, at least in my lifetime, that's the way it's always been. So anyway, I'm curious to see where they go with that, Warren, but I do think that was the first time they actually introduced the word shale in the series. So they're kind of educating along. And that, anyway, you got to remember, most of the world still believes that, you know, we're Jed Clampett oiling the thing out here. That, you know, all the Jed Clampett oil has been gone for a while, for the most part. I mean, do you guys have much left in Kansas?
No, we've been producing oil here and for over 100 years. We're one of the most well-mapped states in the United States. And, you know, the idea of going out and shooting in a river and finding oil is long gone here in Kansas.
Well, there goes the real estate values in Kansas. I mean, all you got now is witches and tornadoes and falling houses, Wizard of Oz type things. Okay. All right. I didn't have any other joke. That was the best I had. They're not all award winners, folks. They're not all award winners.
Sometimes you just need to know when to click your heels together and go home and stop.
And we're getting to that point right now. But okay, I got paella is in my top two or three or one of favorite foods. It's probably my favorite food of all time. And the reason I wrote this down is that, will Allie Larder finish a dinner? Her character is absolutely fantastic. I think she gets better and better. She is a special kind of hot mess. She truly is. It's amazing how much her entitlement and her just detached sense of reality actually advances so many humanitarian storylines in this episode. And here's my question to you, Warren. You know this Tyler Sheridan character better than I do. You've seen Yellowstone, I haven't. All right. Is he doing an ESG woke thing here? Because the way that the ESG and the woke world came in, it almost came in through like human resources, and it came in through a lot of like mothering type ways. And now you got these women that have come into this communal living, taking the Pop-Tarts out, putting in healthy snacks. Now, you've got somebody looking over your shoulder here, somebody looking over your shoulder here, somebody looking over your shoulder here. That's very ESG and very woke type behavior. So on one hand, I think I'm overthinking now. I think I'm overthinking, but on the other hand, hey, that's some good layered writing in this, this Tyler Sheridan character. He seems like he's that. When I bring up the Landman, that's the first thing people bring up over Billy Bob. They bring up Tyler's name over Billy Bob's. That's power. That's good.
Yeah, so I don't know Taylor Sheridan. I don't know him very well.
Oh, it's Taylor?
Yeah, Taylor.
Yeah, that's embarrassing for me. That's how little I've been. I got rid of my television in 2006 because I didn't want my son growing up around 24-hour news stations and commercials. So we stream, but yeah, that's why I'm kind of disconnected here. But
So
go ahead, go ahead. Sorry.
I don't know him at all. I've never met him, don't know him. I have watched a number of his shows. I like a number of his shows. I will say that food choices is brought up as a topic in several of his shows, what people eat and how they eat. And in Lioness, another show that he has on Paramount Plus, food topics are brought up a couple times in that show. And Taylor Sheridan is actually in that show as a cast member. And he's a pretty buff guy. I mean, he's a pretty built, stocky guy. So I could see healthy eating being a part of his retinue on a daily basis, but I don't know. I think that probably to me, what I took away from her food choices is the same thing that I took away from the coyote at the very end of the show when Tommy is out there admiring the coyote and the coyote gets put down. And I think that in both of those situations, you have two characters that see themselves in what's on the table. You have her who sees herself as an elegant, exotic dish that she wants everybody to appreciate and enjoy the right way, what, no matter what their preferences are. She's so overwhelming. You take me as I am, and you do it that way because I am who I am. And that's what she wants. And so will she ever finish a meal? I don't know. That's part of the frustration she has, is that her food is who she is as a character. In the same way, at the end of the show, you have Tommy out there admiring a coyote that has wandered up close to the house. And I think when he's looking at that coyote, he's seeing himself, a wild, a viral creature that's out there on the prey. It's a predator. It's out there trying to make its way and then is put down in an instant because it got too close to homesteads. It got too close to what we call humanity. And I think you're seeing both of them kind of look their characters in their own eyes and really trying to figure out where do I go as a character because no one's appreciating my meal and everyone wants to put down me as a coyote. And so how do I respond to this world to move forward? And I think that's really what I saw from both of those two scenes.
That last scene, I didn't write down actually the coyote, but I'm glad you brought it up because that was really disturbing. That was very disturbing. I'm such an animal lover that I don't even kill spiders. I take them outside. So that really bothered me, but that's an interesting perspective you had. My perspective was this, that initially I thought it was a wolf, and Tommy was looking at himself as the lone wolf. But then I noticed, no, that's a coyote. Okay, maybe Tommy's looking at himself as he's misunderstood. He thinks he's a lone wolf out there, but he's a coyote, really. And then he gets put down. And I thought, oh, okay, well, why did he get put down? Because of somebody being proactive, somebody assuming that coyote is going to go and eat all the pets. And so therefore you got to put him down. And I don't know, we kind of landed in the same place, I guess. We took some different paths there a little bit because of my misunderstanding of the animal that it was. And honestly, the reason I thought it was a wolf, because like I said, I thought it was a lone wolf type symbolism, but and that was just in an instant, because that's a very formulaic type of a symbolism, is to show the like a lone wolf when somebody's feeling alone out there. But a coyote's a different deal. Yeah, that's a ragged, viral pack animal that gets put down, that somebody looks at and just scoffs at right away. And that can be the oil and gas industry, actually. And actually, I think that's more of an income thing more than anything, where you start hearing the word trust fund babies and second, third, fourth, fifth generation. And I'll never forget when one of the wealthier people I've ever met in my life said to me that he's first generation. And if he lived on the East Coast, he would be looked down upon like he's just middle class, because he's not third, fourth, fifth generation wealth. That there's always a higher rung, there's always another ceiling, there's always another step. So you think you've made it because you're a billionaire? Well, you're only first generation. You're not a Rockefeller. You're not a Rothschild. You're not a Van Housen or whatever the Van Nostrand families are and that sort of thing. But yeah, I thought that was a powerful ending. And it really kind of came out of nowhere. And it I don't know. That was what was your takeaway again? That he was put down for what reason? He doesn't belong there?
Well, I think I don't know why the reason the coyote was put down, same reason, where I lived in New Mexico, and I never even thought about it being a wolf, because in that part of in the Permian Basin, that area, yes, Ted Turner years ago reintroduced the Mexican wolf to New Mexico, and
Oh,
you
he
have
did.
some it, there have he reintroduced them to certain areas, and we had a lot of trouble with New Mexico with wolves coming down to take out small calves and stuff like that. They would decimate a herd when they began hunting. But in that area, in Permian Basin, West Texas, New Mexico, it'd be a coyote. Coyotes hunt in packs. They get together, they hunt in packs, but they tend to run throughout the day as loners, and kind of skirmish around for food and stuff. But they hunt in packs. And so what I saw it as is I saw it as him seeing himself as this wild, independent creature that is working in this wild world. And while he's sitting there appreciating this animal, it's put down by humanity. And there's been several times in this show where you can see where he kind of has felt that away, because he used to be the owner of his own company. Now he's working for someone else who continually reminds him that he's not the boss, that he doesn't get to make the decisions, and that people didn't ask him for his opinion. And I think he's at the towards the end of his life, and he's really looking at it and saying, "Is that me? Is that me? Am I getting too close to humanity that they're going to put me down because I'm a creature that no longer is welcome here in this world that we live in?" And that's kind of what I took away from it.
One more note, and then we'll bid adieu to this week's review and reaction is Cooper. We haven't really talked about Cooper and his love interest, and they kind of had a minor storyline in time-wise, but it definitely sets the table for a lot of future type things. And here's what I wrote down. At the end of the day, no business card. A cold call with research. My word is my worth. Let's go do contracts over coffee. That's some old school oil and gas there, baby. That is setting the table for old school values, old school oil and gas. And then you've got Rebecca the Harvard, Oxford educated litigator or whatever that's going to come in and wordsmith you and trick you and manipulate you. Anyway, to me, that's what I saw. Old school ethics versus cutthroat corporatism coming head to head, baby. What would you think about Cooper's approach to business?
I think that that is the most Kansan thing I've seen in this entire show. When I go around Kansas and I talk to producer after producer after producer, it's amazing how many of them began by working on a drilling rig. How many of them began by buying a truck and running a service truck. And then they developed those relationships. They built that company. Got a very good friend who walked into a bar and was talking with a guy selling him his dream. And the guy that he was sitting next to and he was selling his dream to him said, go down to this bank, tell them that you talked to me. And he got his first loan because another producer basically co-signed for him and said that he would cover his loan. And that's where the independent oil and gas industry truly begins, is that you are no bigger than your word. And then it comes down to, are you able to fulfill your word or not? And I think in this show, we saw several different ways that you can go about fulfilling that word. You can look at Tommy and how Tommy's doing the business. You can look at Ham and how Ham's doing the business. You can look at Jerry Jones and what Jerry Jones says doing the business, which is really interesting, the contradiction there, because Jerry Jones was talking about making sure your family's with you. John Hamm was at his daughter's race, but when he's in the hospital, he asked, "Are my daughters out there?" And the answer was no, they weren't there. And you can see the disappointment on his face. And now you got Cooper, who's really got to pick one of the three different directions. Is he going to do it with his girlfriend and do it as a family going forward? Is he going to do it on his own, regardless of what his family does? Or is he going to do it like his dad and just go out there and blow everything up and end up broke? And, you know, I think that all three of those fears are in his head, because there's fears with all of them. And certainly no one wants to go out and do it and go broke. No one wants to go out there and do it on their own, but it's extremely hard to build a dream and take your family along with you if you don't have resources to protect you along the way, which he doesn't. That's very hard to take a whole family with you and building that dream. So I think it really kind of set that up to where it opens up for a lot of storylines available as to family relationships, financial relationships, business relationships. And how does he move forward with this dream that he has?
Well, next week is the season finale, episode 10. And we should probably do some quick predictions here. And as I mentioned, Andy Garcia was advertised before the season started. I thought he was going to have more of a role. So my guess is he will be introduced into the next season, unless they cut him out completely. I haven't heard anything about that, but knowing Andy Garcia's pedigree and his look, he's definitely going to be a John Hamm type character. I don't think he's going to be a rugged oil roughneck type. He might be an attorney. He appears more like the casino owner, like in Ocean's 11 and Ocean's 12 and Ocean's 13. He looks very good in a suit like John Hamm does. So I think he's going to be introduced as the nemesis or the villain, the Victor Kiriakis, the Stefano Damera, if you will. And then the other prediction I have is I got to do a couple of my Days of Our Lives drops from the 90s, from when my mom used to watch it. All right, so then we've got Ansley, the daughter. I think she's going to get kidnapped by the cartel. I think the kidnapping thing is in vogue with the cartel. That is a realistic storyline with the cartel. Rich people get their children kidnapped more than poor people do because of ransom. So to me, it makes sense. Those are my two big predictions for a season finale, are those cliffhangers that Andy Garcia is going to be introduced in some way that'll cliffhanger-esque, and Ansley, the daughter, will be kidnapped by the cartel. Your predictions, good sir.
Oh, man, my predictions going forward are, number one, I think that we're going to have an elderly person that's going to die at the strip club from overexertion.
I how's that a prediction? That's a foregone conclusion. Come on. She's already asking for a paramedic.
I'm working on my rating, man. I'm working on my rating. She hasn't got the paramedic, though. She hasn't got the paramedic yet.
No, but by the way, kudos, hats off for even thinking that.
I'm thinking it.
I mean, it's kind of comical, but at least it's proactive thinking. Hey, let's...
So I think that's going to happen. Two, I think that that Tommy and the other lawyer that's been made VP, I can't remember her name, but the other lawyer's become VP.
Rebecca.
Yeah. I think they're going to begin the process of destroying the company. That's going to end up in dividing the company between Ham and his wife in the next season. But I think it's going to start next week, and they're going to begin that process moving forward. Three, I think that Cooper is going to go immediately into competition with his dad and is actually going to beat his dad on a deal with backing. And maybe it's from Garcia coming in. I don't know. But he's going to find backing that he's going to one-up his dad, which is going to put him at odds with his dad as a competitor in the final season. So by the end of episode 10, you're going to have Cooper and his dad at each other's throat. You're going to have Tommy and the other lawyer at each other's throat. You're going to have a cliffhanger as to who's running the company, Ham or Demi Moore. And you're going to have Angela in a complete meltdown because she is no longer allowed at the nursing home because one of the elderly people died and now she's completely lost because that's the only purpose she had in life.
Oh, she's such a special type of hot mess. And, you know, really, she's trying to find her identity. You know, really, she's trying to find, is she the cultured Spaniard that offers paella that you can't have a plate? Or is she the type that's really cool that brings a senior citizen to a strip club for a bucket's list? Because remember, the whole reason for the strip club is the heart of gold, right? I want them to do their bucket list, right? I mean, so how can you argue with that? So she's one of the most complex hot messes. I can't wait to talk to Christian Wallace about her character because, like I've told you, I think she's the most realistic character in the whole series. As episodes go on, like she was plucked right out of West Texas from the way she dresses to the way she talks to the way she looks to just everything. Her priorities, everything about it. I just absolutely love her to death. Okay, so we've pretty much ended each episode, too, with is this a net positive or a net negative for the industry? I think overall the episode was very net positive for the industry. The soundtrack was good. The introduction of the trigger words we mentioned earlier from shale to keeping the word frack out. I think this was more of an awareness type episode with a humanistic side to it too. So Warren, I think this series has the real potential to become a realistic educational piece for the rest of the industry. Now that I've seen the way they've introduced the shale, the wolf camp, and the potential for the technology side of things, because the technology is what's going to be able to bridge the gap better than anything.
Yeah, I think this was net positive. I'm not as optimistic as you are as to where the show is going to go. But I do think that, you know, as we've noted throughout all of these episodes, many of these episodes, that Taylor Sheridan kind of plays both sides and goes one to this, you know, plays the environmental side versus oil and gas industry side and kind of goes. I really saw this show as Taylor Sheridan really talking to the industry. And how do you do your negotiation? What kind of relationships do you have? And really challenging as a challenge to the industry to check yourself and as kind of a way to say, okay, how are you doing business? Are you doing it the right way? Is this what is best going forward? And in that way, I think it is a net positive. I think it's good for everybody in every industry of every business practice that you can find that we should constantly be looking at how are we doing our business? And is there a better way to do it that builds people up rather than tears people down, moves people forward rather than holds them back? And I really saw this show as an episode of Taylor Sheridan really mimicking what is going on in the oil and gas industry right now. And that changeover that has taken place where we are really going from the big oil of old days that just didn't care and didn't respond and didn't have anything to do with the PR world to a responsive industry that is utilizing technology, utilizing all the resources that are available, incorporating HR, developing relationships, and has really has come a long way since the 1980s and before to create one of the most technical, efficient industries in the world right now, and that we should continue to evaluate those relationships and what we're doing. And I think that's a net positive.
Warren Martin with Kansas Strong, thank you very much for episode 9, Wolf Camp, a recap and review of Landman, streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Discount links available in the description or in any of the articles we do on the crude life. So, hey, Warren, thanks a lot. Well, next week, man, season finale.
Season finale. Here we go. Ready or not?